to be pausing our series of going through the Bible and different themes, and to look at a very, very important theme of God's heart for the poor and the needy. And at the same time, we're going to be hearing reports from two areas that we actually work in. One is CAP and the other one is Save Families. And today we're going to be focusing on CAP. Next week we will do Save Families. But before we look at the reports, and they're going to be, it's going to be absolutely brilliant hearing the stories Brian is going to share. But we just need to look at, why do we do this? Why is this important, both as an individual Christian and as a church, as a community? Why? Why prioritize this? Why put it in the focus? Why spend our time thinking about it, praying about it, and most of all doing it? Well, I need to give you a little bit of story about me. Many years, I was brought up in evangelical churches, churches like this, similar type. And I was taught great stuff. I used to focus on the Bible. It was study the Bible, and I had fantastic teaching. And I also was taught about evangelism, sharing my faith. I was taught a lot about, you know, the church and how the church works. But actually, I'm going to be honest, and I'm sad to say it, but I was not taught about the poor. It was one of those things that was on the side of the church for the keenies, right? It's not a TV program, the keenies, the ones who were keen. And it was over there. And I wasn't going to be honest, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I looked at it and went, okay, that's for really keen people. And I also viewed those people with a bit of suspicion. I actually thought they were a bit politically motivated. And I thought, well, that's good for them, but not for me. And I actually viewed them with suspicion. And I probably would have, you could have cut me in half and you would say, you're a bit of a cocktail of a bit of fear about it, because some of the things that reaching the poor and loving the poor is quite scary. I also probably, you could argue, I had a lack of opportunity to do it, but deep down I had a hidden prejudice. I'm ashamed to say it, but deep down I thought it was their fault. The poor, well, it deep down, if you take off that nice outward layer, it was that I saw them as it was their fault. And I'm ashamed to say it. And then the second thing was, it was a bit of ignorance. I never explored why do we focus on the poor? And I just want to do this morning, just give you a bit of information, a bit of thought to make you think again and re-understand the gospel is absolutely for the poor, and we are asked to be very much part of it. It is central to the heart of God himself. I won't cover it today, but God will actually look at you at the end of your life and he will judge what you've done, and some of it will be your heart to the poor. I haven't got time to cover that today because that's quite scary. But a great place to start is, let's look at God himself. You know, if you want to understand something, look at the heart of the person. And one of the things of Christianity, one of the great things that we need to look at is, what is God like? What is his passion? What is his priorities? As well as obviously who we are. And I think it's crucial we start with that. So let's just start with looking at some commands in the Bible. Let's look at God's heart behind these commands. And let's just dive straight into the Old Testament. In the book of Deuteronomy, when God lays out to Israel things to do and how to organize their lives and their communities, It very early on in the book of Deuteronomy, which is an early book in the Bible, he hits the whole of Israel with this statement. If anyone is poor among your fellow Israelites in any of the towns of the land the Lord your God is giving you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted towards them. Rather, be open-handed, freely lend them whatever they need. Absolutely clear. God sees the poor straight away and says, this is your responsibility, Israel. Next, Proverbs. It's always good to read a proverb occasionally. It's really punchy. And Proverbs is actually a great place to hear about God's heart for the poor and the needy. This one is about justice. He says this in Proverbs 31, speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and needy. He's increasing the remit, isn't he? He's saying, my heart isn't just for the poor that you provide for them, but you defend them and speak for them. Next one. This is in the New Testament. Some people, it's all Old Testament. No, it's New Testament. When Jesus started his ministry, he went into a synagogue, he unrolled the scroll and went straight to Isaiah 61, and guess what he read? This famous verse. He said, the Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. Straight in there. If you just go to the next slide, when Jesus is teaching on the kingdom and how the kingdom works and the priorities of the kingdom, he goes straight into this, blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who hunger now, for you will be satisfied. If you just take to the book of James, I've been reading this recently with Ian Brown, and we went through these verses. Look at the book of James. It makes it absolutely clear. He says, listen, my brothers and sisters. So this is a man in the New Testament writing to a church. Has not God chosen those who are poor in the eyes of the world to be rich in faith and inherit the kingdom of God he promised to those who love him? But you have dishonored the poor. Boom, straight in. Now, I haven't got time to cover whether he's talking about poor in spirit or not. I could go on for hours about that. But what I want you to just take a definition. If you want to understand the definition of what poor means, it's this. In biblical terms, it is anybody you know or come across who spiritually, mentally, financially, materially, resourcefully less than you are is effectively the poor. That's quite a big thought, isn't it? But it's interesting. God says that, but at the same time, he shows us his absolute full heart is for the lowest of the low, the destitute. And if you look at it in Matthew 25, he actually identifies symbolically with the poor. In Matthew 25, Jesus himself says, when you fed the hungry, you gave to me. This is Jesus saying it. You gave to me. When you gave a drink to the one who was thirsty, you were giving it to me. When you invited the stranger into your house, you were actually inviting me. When you clothed the naked, you were clothing me. When you visited the sick, you were visiting me. When you visited the prisoner, you were actually visiting me. It's stunning how he identifies with the poor symbolically. He does it in Proverbs as well. And it says, if you trample on the poor, you're trampling on me. It's absolutely amazing, but it gets even further. It goes further, because God doesn't just identify with the poor symbolically. He doesn't just command us to within our, but he also directly identifies with them physically. And the best of all is the incarnation itself. As when Jesus became a man, lived amongst us, and then the death of Jesus. How does he identify with the poor? Well, Jesus was born in a feeding trough. Yes, I know the lovely pictures. We know manger, you know, we in a manger. And it's great. But it was actually a feeding trough. Jesus was born in a feeding trough. Manger, that's what it means. It's very poor. At his circumcision, Jesus' family offered what was required for the lowest of the low, the poor. They were meant to go to the temple and offer things. So, you know, some people offered, you know, rich digestive biscuits, and somebody would come along and offer something really nice. But when it came to Jesus' family, his family were one of the poor. They offered the lowest possible thing because that's what the poor were expected to give. He describes himself as homeless. Foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests. The Son of Man has no place to lay his head. And now, at the end of his life, he rode into Jerusalem on a borrowed donkey. Not a horse, a donkey. I don't know about you, but I don't like donkeys. They're really, really grumpy every time I get involved with them, but some people love them. But he actually wasn't the most exciting animal on the planet. And well, it was borrowed. He didn't even own it. Then he spent his last evening of his life in a hostel. I'm pushing the limit here just to get you to see how I identified with the poor. When he died, he was buried in a borrowed tomb. He didn't even have a grave assigned to him, his family. He was borrowed from somebody else. And then the biggest of all, his only possession was sold on Facebook Marketplace for virtually nothing. His only possession, his robe, was just put it on Facebook Marketplace. What's the lowest you can put on? Nothing. Right, nothing. Can you imagine going on Facebook Marketplace? Your only possession you've got, you go on and you look and it's there for nothing. The Bible clearly says the God we worship commands us, his focus and his priorities are for the poor and the needy. He symbolically and physically identifies with the poor and the needy. There is no doubt whatsoever, is it God's priority? It's also in our priority. Not just because God is saying all this and it's true in Scripture, but it also is spoken over our church, King's House Perth. This is a word that came to us from Phil Wilthew in 2010. And he said this to us. It was just before, CAP had started. I think Safe Families was just about to start. And he said, I see aircraft, emergency helicopter coming and dropping supplies on the front line. Frontline packages to the troops. There is something going to open up in a greater way, mission to those in need. One of the frontline areas in the advance in the city is going to be connecting to the most vulnerable and connecting to those in poverty, and particularly food poverty. I feel that you will accidentally stumble on things and it's going to be one of God's key strategies of and advance. And I could see the name of your church becoming known because of the way you care for the poor. You know, Jonathan Edwards said, Christians should be famous for one thing, the way they care for the poor. So, I'm just going to just give one more comment and then we're going to move towards giving a report of what God has been doing through CAP. CAP is Christians Against Poverty, and I have had, just personally, to show my own personal testimony has got redemption in it. I know you all depressed you at the beginning. I have now had 3 CAP clients, and every single one has been a blessing. I can't give you details because it's the nature of the game. You can't. But one of them, just going to give you one headline, likes cats. Now, if anybody knows what I'm like with a cat, it is fascinating how God's sense of humor is brings me into contact with people. But it's fantastic. It's been a blessing. Now, I just want to say something. There's often a confusion over why we do this. And I know we get, there's quite a lot of guilt involved with when you talk about this. People feel guilty. And we know that's not the motivation, because you know guilt. Guilt lasts about an hour and then you feel better. And the world is absolutely uses guilt. Go on any website, go on any Twitter feed, and it's all the time guilt, shame, throwing it at each other. And we know that does not motivate. And we also know it's not just about us feeling better. It's got to be more than that. We don't serve the poor just because we want to feel better. But I just want to give you a little thing here. There's a principle about this, which is scriptural. And it's this. We don't care for the poor for our benefit. But when we do and step out, we receive. There is this amazing dynamic that happens in the kingdom, is that we don't go into doing it because we want something out of it. Jesus laid his life down completely, okay? But as we do it, God blesses us. So our motivation isn't, I want something from this, because we all know that doesn't work. Because if you're going to serve the poor, it's going to be continuously difficult because of the type of issues you face. Believe me, that's Brian. He knows. He faces it. People don't turn up for interviews. Their lives are in difficult mess. And I don't need to say any more. You don't go in demanding blessing and saying, I want something out of this. But you know something? This is the dynamic of the kingdom. The kingdom does not work in any other way like our normal life. It works in a different way. But as we do it, we are blessed. Here's some scriptures just to, because some of you will be thinking, what? Here's some scriptures. Isaiah 58, if you pour yourself out for the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then shall your light rise in the darkness and your gloom be as the noonday sun. Amazing, isn't it? Proverbs 22, verse 9. The generous will themselves be blessed, for they share their food with the poor. Give generously to them, and doing so without a grudging heart. Then, because of this, the Lord your God will bless you in your work and in everything you put your hand to. I could go on. It's the sowing and the reaping. This kingdom is amazing. We do not do things. We do not do things to get something. We're not trying to bend God's arm. We do it out of sheer and total love for God and for that person. But when we do it, we're blessed. God is never our debtor. He doesn't just... Oh, it's the kingdom. You are operating out the kingdom. You sow and you reap generously. It happens again and again. The only thing I would say is it's not automatic and it doesn't always happen straight away. We have to trust. Sometimes we're dropping seeds that take a long, long, long time to bear fruit. Sometimes it does say in one scripture, you won't see the fruit of it until you get to the end of your life. Either way, God is never your debtor. We have a kingdom that is absolutely different. I will say this, we don't do this for our own benefit, but we receive when we do it. And I can promise you, that has been my experience with doing cap clients. Okay, we've been given two arms in the city. As I said, one is cap, the other one is safe families. There are different types of relief that God speaks about in the Bible. One is immediate relief. Another one is development. which is what is done to take people out of a place of dependence into self-sufficiency, and then reform. The Bible talks about reform, social reform, beyond the relief of immediate needs, changing the structures that creates this dependency in the first place. And I just want to say that's what the Bible says. This is not out of a political dictionary or a political polemic. It is what the Bible actually teaches us. There are those three. Just to give you an idea, immediate relief is food banks. And we give to the food bank in Perth, and we will continue to. It is a big need. If you want to give more, please let me know. Let Mark know, and we will continue to give. We do give lump sums. We would like to give more. That's immediate relief. And also, I would say Save Families is probably an immediate relief. Okay? It's about immediately facing the need of a family, and we'll talk about that next week, who are in real need. But development, this is what is done to bring people to a place of self-sufficiency. If you think about it, CAP is enabling people who have gone into a very difficult situation to be able to come out of it themselves. So it's actually number two. But I just want you to know there are other things we can be doing as Christians. So today we're going to hear about CAP, the latest progress and the data. And just before we do that, both Brian and I are going to show a short video on the actual mechanics of what CAP does, because it's always great to hear the glossy stories about all the great things, but sometimes people say, well, what is it? What do you actually do? So we're just going to cover that for a few minutes, and then Brian is going to give you an update of how CAP is doing and some stories.
No matter how bad it is, there's always hope and a solution. At our headquarters here in Bradford, we have around 100 staff who are trained and experienced to deal with your case. They will build a budget and negotiate with creditors on your behalf.
They were just natural, authentic. They were just real people that were going, they had the skill to help us.
I just felt so warm, and I felt like how much they actually cared for me.
And it didn't matter how long or how short of a time, you know, it was going to take, that they were going to be there.
And I started sort of thinking there may be light at the end of this tunnel here.
I actually feel it now. There's just this weight coming off of you, think. From being lost in a downward spiral to seeing a way forward.
The big thing that you need to do now is to get all of your financial paperwork together. This is things like wage slips, benefits paperwork, demand letters from your creditors, or current bills. Before your debt coach leaves today, they will give you a further list of paperwork that you need to get together so that we can start working with you to build a solution that will get you out of debt.
Well, go through all your paperwork, just bring all your paperwork, just give me all the paperwork.
That was so liberating. It was just, oh, so good to open them, even if it was just to put them to one side.
Shop for life bags and big bags. I had three of them full of letters that's not even been opened. And yeah, and Carol and Catherine said, don't worry, we're sorted for them.
They just left with it and just like, we'll sort it all out for you and then we'll get back to you. And they just took it. And any mail that comes, just keep for me, just put it on the side, keep it, we'll come and get it and we'll sort it all out. So it wasn't my responsibility anymore. It just felt like it had gone. It's gone.
Once you have all of your paperwork together, your debt coach will come back for a second visit. They'll take you through a fact find where we collect information that we need about your debts and financial situation. This is all then filled in and sent straight back to our head office in Bradford, where we get to work on your case, build a budget, and look at what options are available for you in your situation. On the third visit, your debt coach will explain what options you have for getting out of debt. If there's more than one, they'll tell you the pros and the cons of each and help you make the very best decision. Some of these options may involve setting up a cap plan for you, which you pay money into so that we distribute it to your creditors. At the end of the day, though, it's up to you to decide what you want to do.
They gave me all the options. They gave me everything. Every inch of the way, they were just in contact with me.
It was a case of, here are your options. Here's what we should do. What do you think?
And it makes you very, very grateful and very humble
very
that
humble,
people
yeah.
are doing that to help you.
As you work your way out of debt...
Hi. I'm going to assume a little bit of knowledge on your part about CAP, because otherwise I'd be standing here talking for hours. So really this is an update. There's an example of our advertising, by the way, the kind of branding that we do. Here in Perth, we started CAP in September 2019. Doesn't time fly? I had been recruited earlier that year, so really I've been involved for 4 years. During that time, we've had around 40 clients referred to us. 12 of them are still currently active. Thank you for keeping up with me. and 6 people or families are now completely debt-free. Now, it's lovely to hear, wow, that's great, but some of you might be thinking 6 doesn't seem that many, but you have to remember a few things. One is that the process can take years. It can take 3 to 5 years to become debt-free for those who are repaying debts. The other thing is, of those 40 clients, inevitably, by the nature of the people that come to us, some of them will fall at the first hurdle, the second hurdle, whatever. It's not an easy process to go through. Okay. Now, in conversations with many of you here over the last 2 years at least, people have been saying, oh, the pandemic, surely there's a big problem coming. You're going to have a lot more business. And for quite a while, we didn't. But the rate of new referrals has increased from about 40% of what we can take, okay, in 2021 to around 80% a year later. So that's basically the second half of last year, and it's still increasing. Now, I think that the cost of living rise is part of the reason for that. It's frightened people, unsurprisingly. But now, of course, things are starting to come out that are really got going many years ago, certainly during the pandemic. So I think it's also a factor, though, that increase of the fact that we're becoming known in the city. It's been a hard slog to become known in the city, partly because pandemic times, people didn't really want to know us because they were all scrabbling to try and organise what they already did working from home. So, there we go. In terms of input from King's House Perth, we have 7 volunteers and we have 4 from other churches. And some of those 7 from here are sitting here now. You know who you are. I'm not going to name you. But that's a real blessing. We just couldn't do it without those people. Now, let me just organise myself. Thank you. What does the future for CAP look like? Well, I've mentioned this before. I need an extra debt coach, okay, for various reasons. One is just sustainability. If something were to happen to me, then the work in Perth grinds to a halt tomorrow. Or at least what would probably happen is we would farm out some of the existing cases to the guy in Creef and the lady in Aberfeldy. They would see those people through, but new clients just wouldn't be taken on. Now, the last time I spoke to you, I said we need money to allow this to happen. And we've got it.
Yes.
We've got the money in place to employ a debt coach. And that will take place in a few months' time. And we're just waiting for various logistical things to get in place. That volunteer group that I mentioned, seven of from here and four from other churches involved, is now up to strength. What an answer to prayer. You'd be surprised. It wasn't easy getting there. And the reason why it wasn't easy is that it's a big commitment, okay, in time, but also you are investing yourself. Like Julian has been describing, this is not a small thing to do. Okay, another part of the future, links with Letham for All are growing, including possible premises. It's likely that we will have some permanent presence, not full-time, but permanent presence in their new building, which is due for completion in March. Okay. That will be a blessing both to them and to us. The people behind that organisation are significant within the council, for instance. So there will be a further integration of CAP into the fabric of the city there. Now, I thought long and hard about whether to put this this part in. We do have new projects under active investigation, and one of those potential ones, it's at a very early stage, but I wanted to mention it to you because I'd like you to pray about it, please. And that is HMP Birth, the prison. Now, at the moment, one of the biggest issues with prisons around the UK is that they release people back into the community handicapped by all sorts of things, employment, housing, and so on. And one of those things is people leaving prison with debt that was accumulated before they went into prison. I mean, how to keep somebody down in one easy lesson, yeah? Now, the process that lady Paula Stringer talked about on the video there is not possible to do with a person in prison. So it will be a cut down, very direct process we take them through. Of course, by definition, when you're in prison, you don't have income. So it's not going to be a repayment situation. But we know that one of the centres in Edinburgh has started this with some success. So the next step in the process is for me to learn more about the prison and more about that work in Edinburgh so that I can learn some lessons and try and apply it here. We've had an initial contact with one of the chaplaincy team at the prison who's spoken to the kind of head chaplain there, and she thinks it's a great idea and is wanting to help us get in there. But slowly, slowly, we've got to do it right rather than fast. So please pray that we do that well, and that when we start to properly push the doors, that they begin to open. I'm looking at Matt because I said that to him the other night, and he laughed about the idea of opening doors in prison. But anyway. Okay. I just want to explain one really important thing before I finish, and that is the nature of the job itself. When you go to the training, you can get the impression that you go through those three meetings that were described, you're collecting a load of facts and figures, paperwork, asking a million questions, getting the answers, collecting it all, collating it all, sending off the information, getting the plan back and going back to the client and say, right, this is how you can do it. Make your choice this way, that way, or the other way. And that's, of course, that's part of it all. But if I tell you a little bit about three real clients that we've dealt with in Perth, it'll give you an idea that it's way more than that. The first case I'm going to talk about was a Christian woman. She had, I'm talking to her as if she's passed away. She has multiple serious health problems. She's a single parent. She, at the time, was a mature student, though she will have graduated by now. She actually had quite modest debts, but a very, very low income. And once her course came to an end, that income was going to largely disappear. Because of her illnesses, she had applied for PIP and been refused, which is kind of standard practice with PIP. You apply, you get refused, you appeal, and the appeal is generally successful. But this lady was desperate. What I did was I said to her, okay, you've got to get your incomes increased and secure. So pop down to Welfare Rights at the council, and they will explain to you what you could expect to get. And so she did that, and Welfare Rights said to her, you should never have been refused PIP. We will send somebody with you to the appeal to be an advocate for you. So that all took place. The appeal was successful. And you know something? She then didn't need all that process. She just didn't need it. She could sort it herself from there. So one of the things that becomes really obvious, and we learn from this, is that we must integrate within the whole community of our city and with the services provided. We cannot stand alone in terms of trying to deal with the debt in Perth. The second case I want to describe, another woman, when I met her, she was grieving. She was grieving because of a divorce, and even though that divorce happened some 10 years ago, she's also grieving because of the death of her son. And I got to pray with her on the anniversary of the death of her son, which was a real privilege. It was a real privilege. Julian has talked about the fact that we don't serve to get back. But out of praying with that woman, I was really blessed. What she actually needed in financial terms was just a bit of budgeting advice. She massively needed a lot of pastoral care. So the befriender and myself spent many, many more hours than you would normally expect with this client, kind of debriefing and let her just, well, I remember once when in teaching, I remember somebody describing a situation like that as like pulling out a safety valve and the pressure comes away, pressure comes away. And then I was just able to hand her on to the money course. So again, I didn't need to go through actually all of that process. But my point in telling you this is that actually pastoral care is in fact as big a part, if not a bigger part, of what CAP does than the actual financial debt advice. And finally, there was another woman. It's just coincidence that I've chosen three cases that were all women. She actually had a really good income. I don't want you to get the impression that the poor are always people on low incomes. They aren't. First of all, as those, as that last case shows, the poor includes people who are poor because of their mental health, their emotional health, etc. But this particular woman had a very good income, and what she also had, though, was that she was coming out of an abusive and controlling relationship. That was a relatively recent thing. It was so drastic, she had lost 10 stone in weight. That's how much it had affected her. And that wasn't a deliberate loss of weight. That happened through the emotional trauma that she was going through. So there was a need to just let her talk about that. It didn't particularly help me in getting the job done. In fact, you could argue it got in the way in a sense that it took up a lot of time. However, that woman is now on a CAP plan or a repayment plan and is making real progress. So I just wanted to give you this morning the impression that it's not all about facts and figures. It's about people. It's about their situations. It's about their problems. And it's about bringing some grace and mercy into that situation. And occasionally, we fix their finances too. Okay. One thing I didn't mention earlier, I'll be very quick, Julian, is just that one of the changes that's happened over the last year or so is that when we produce a budget for a person to live by, because the idea is you kind of fix the debt problem, but give them a budget so that they won't cycle back into debt, something to live by. But 40% of the budgets we are now preparing are what we call broken budgets. That doesn't mean the person has a broken budget. They've already had that. That's why they're talking to us. What we mean is we can't make a budget for them that works. Okay? Their expenses are too high compared with their income. And of course, the cost of living crisis and the energy prices and so on are a major part of why that is true. So at the moment, 40% of people cannot, sorry, 40% of the people who come to us cannot survive without food banks and the like. So please pray. Particularly remember that hopefully that development in the prison.